Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first ever LRM podcast in association with Britpart. An hour of chat all about Land Rovers and everything that surrounds them. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And together, we're going to get to the bottom of all sorts of stuff regarding Land Rovers and, you know, all the stuff that comes along with owning them. So join us, hopefully, over the next podcast that we do off the back of this one, if it all goes well. And, yeah. So the inspiration for this whole podcast really came about earlier this week, wasn't it?
It certainly was. Basically, I want new wheels and tyres for my Land Rover.
we're both back from LRM Live at Malvern, although everyone thinks you've been to Spain because you've come back a completely different colour.
Well, I do say it's Costa del Malvern.
Well, it was at the weekend.
It was absolutely glorious weather.
That thunderstorm, that very short storm, it was absolutely cracking weather, wasn't it? But yeah, the trouble with going to an event like that is you just get constantly surrounded by amazing Land Rovers. Like, everyone's idea of their perfect Land Rover is sort of brought to life, and then you walk around and your head is, you come away just overflowing with sort of ideas for your own.
Definitely. I mean, going to a Land Rover show and working the event actually costs us money because we end up leaving wanting more and more for our own cars.
Yeah.
So this is indicative of our audience. You know, the guys listening to this podcast, the guys coming to the shows.
Absolutely. It's, although obviously we do this for a living, it never leaves you. You always find it. I was the same, you know, going back years and years ago, back to things like Land Rover Fest and all those old, the Billings of old. You'd always either be spending money at the show or you'd come away and you'd be like, I need that immediately. Yeah, that's pretty much what the predicament you're finding yourself in now, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, we spoke about wheels and tyres at shows, and you know, I went to the Billing Aquadrome Land Rover show back in my first time in 1995 in a 2A lightweight, and back then everybody that went off roading would get stuck and then queue up at the tyre stand. I think it was Southam Tyres, and the queue of Land Rovers just being fitted with new wheels and tyres there and then, it was you will never see that again. And it was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I was only just starting to go to those events in like sort of the late 90s, I suppose. And I remember, like you said, the queue of people waiting, you know, they'd gone and they'd picked out what tyres and what wheels they wanted, and they would have turned up, you know, on the back of Southam's enormous lorry. And then the excitement of waiting to get them fitted, I was, you know, obviously not old enough to drive then, and you're showing your age a bit there, Steve. But I was excited for them because wheels and tyres are just, well, there's something about them.
Well, I think wheels and tyres is what gives every Land Rover its identity. And, you know, we spoke about tyres in the office earlier, didn't we? And a lot of non-car folk, and believe it or not, non-car folk are amongst us.
Yeah, I know.
I just simply see them as my tyres have worn out and, well, I need new tyres, and they don't even ask the tyre dealer. They just say, well, that's my budget. Can you put some tyres on? How can that be?
It's alien. It's alien to me. But the number of times I've had a car, a Land Rover, and it's needed new tyres or even a new tyre or a pair of new tyres, and you've gone, well, I'll price up new tyres, but actually I could buy wheels and tyres, and you go on like 4x4 tyres or Southam or Silverline or any of those companies, and before you know it, you're spending serious money on brand new wheels and tyres.
You always want your tyres to wear out, so it gives you an excuse to buy more.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I'm probably not speaking for myself here in that before you know it, you've got two or three stacks in the back garden, you know, and you can sort of rotate them about and change the look of things, and it's really, you know, a bit sad. But
I think this is it with Land Rovers, though. It's like everyone uses their Land Rover differently. So one tyre doesn't fit all.
No.
You know, and it, like I said earlier, it defines a Land Rover for its purpose. So if somebody's trundling down the road now with some really aggressive mud terrains, but the thing is immaculate, you know that it's done for looks rather than something like a working vehicle where perhaps a farmer will have a different tread pattern on the back of his double cab pickup, for example. He might have a more aggressive pattern on the rear than he does the front.
Yeah,
it serves a purpose.
Yeah, I mean, the farmers, and I remember years ago when I'd go with my dad's a farm worker, and I used to go with him when I was younger, mainly to ride in the Defender that you used to drive to check the cattle, and that'd have G90s on the front and what were they? General Super All Traction SAT, I think, on the back. And it was like, why doesn't it have matching? That really played with my head. But realistically, it was a work vehicle and they just bought them because they served a purpose. But to me, it was like, ugh, make them match.
Yeah, no, absolutely. For me, my pet hate, and every Land Rover I've bought, and I have owned a few, is matching tyres. Mm-hmm. They're nothing worse. My current Land Rover, the TD590 that many people may have read about in pages of LRM, that had, I can't remember the two front tyres, but on the back it had two Goodyear G90s. And I think I've owned that tyre a number of times throughout my life, but I've never kept hold of it. I just think it's too...
People joke,
OEM.
Do you think?
Yeah,
people, you know what, tyres get a reputation, don't they? And people say G90s are like, if you want to die, you fit G90s. They're like the real sort of widow maker, but I would have driven a Defender on them, but I can't say that they cemented that view in my mind when I used them.
I looked at the date mark on mine and they were almost as old as you.
Oh, right. Yeah, that probably won't help.
Yeah, no. But they had to be changed. I mean, I'm currently running some Davanti Territorias and
yeah,
I'm about 10,000 miles in. They're an okay tyre. But certainly, I'll be honest and say probably, you know, I've had Goodyear ATSAs on Discovery 3s. You're not particularly off-roaded it at all, been a road tyre. And I've seen, you know, 40,000 miles on those tyres with plenty of tread. I don't think my current tyre will see that mileage. I think 20,000, it will be due a change.
But is that necessarily a bad thing? Because if you've had good performance for that 20,000 miles, you've now got the opportunity to buy more tyres.
Ah, yes.
So,
fantastic.
I mean...
That's man maths working right there.
I've got Davanti's All Tourer on my Freelander 2. Or at least
that's a more road bias, isn't it?
It's very road biased, yeah. I recently took them off and fitted the BF Goodrich Trail Terrain, which is really cool. It's like, looks like a sort of chunky all terrain, but it's manners on the road, I cannot fault. But that brings me to what you mentioned earlier, actually, about people who fit muds or all terrains, but they have, you know, they very rarely venture off tarmac and it is just for the look.
It's a real compromise, isn't it?
I mean,
to have that kind of...
You either have the noise, or I've certainly noticed it probably dropped 2 or 3 miles per gallon off my Freelander 2 just by fitting a slightly more aggressive tyre. But I don't know about you, but when if I see a Land Rover out on the road or anywhere and it's got all terrains or something more aggressive than an all terrain fitted, I'm like, they're an enthusiast.
Yes, more than likely. I mean, most Land Rovers are modified to some degree anyway. We know this. We look at every reader of our magazine, they turn up to the shows and everything has got something on it. And I just think the wheels and tyre is a choice, isn't it? And quite expensive choice as well. You know, a set of four wheels and tyres for a Land Rover could be well over £1,000. It's not an insignificant investment.
Absolutely. I mean, apart from doing something like changing a Defender from a hard top to a soft top or a pickup, wheels and tyres are the second, or you know, one of the most impactful changes you make to a Land Rover, whether it's for performance or for looks, isn't it, really?
See, I sit on the fence, really. I don't get a lot of time to go green laning or off-roading, but I know that I much prefer an all-terrain tyre that has possibly quite an aggressive look, because when you've got it around the sidewalk,
yeah,
that's when you know it kind of looks good.
Yeah.
But again, it's down to size of tyre. You know, some people fit extra wide tyres, and I don't think that's always the best thing to do.
I remember years ago, I had my TD590, and I used to do quite a bit of trialling. And anyone who sort of knew me back then will tell you I was a nightmare for changing wheels and tyres. It was like, I couldn't do it quick enough. And I was really pleased. I got an almost new set of... they were the Kumo KL71, like sort of directional mud tyre.
Okay.
But they were 33 by 12 and a half, so they were really big and balloony. And it looked brilliant on the Defender, but I went trialling with it and it was a real soft sort of clay surface. And because they were so wide, they wouldn't dig down at all. I just, you know, I was really struck. I couldn't get from section to section. So I ended up parking the thing up and having a right old strop. But it's so vital that you get that size right. Like, if you're just using it on the road, then fine, go for whatever looks best. But if you need it for, you know, actual off-road use, you've got to think about width.
So I remember back in the day, so I'm going to name drop my best mate here, Pete. He's still got the same Land Rover and Defender 110 TDI, 200 TDI. And he went out and bought brand new set of BF Goodrich mud trains, 265s. And he's still got those tyres now. That's how long. I mean, we're talking 25 years ago.
Wow.
A long time.
That is a long
probably,
time.
Yeah, 25 years ago. I'm going to stick with 25 years. Still got those tyres now. They're obviously three quarters worn. And doesn't use the car daily, obviously. And he got stuck. And I had to tow him out. And he won't mind me admitting. He probably does mind me admitting. But I had an ex-military 90 at the time. And it was fitted with, I believe, my all-time favourite tyre, which is a Michelin XCL. Remember?
Oh, I do remember the XCL. I when I had a previous 110, I was sort of dead set that I wanted a set of them for some reason because they just looked cool and they were like...
Well, Camel Trophy.
Camel Trophy. They're good enough for the military, yeah, and the Camel Trophy, yes. They're good enough for me.
They don't make mistakes, surely. Those.
Well, I drove right up north to go and get them and brought them back and fitted them and thought, maybe they're not for me. Drove up the road and, you know, they had that characteristic.
You know you've got them
noise.
On.
Everyone within a 3 mile radius knows you've got them on. They're loud.
That's one of my favourite noises. And a V8. Get a V8 engine and the whine of that tyre. About 45 miles an hour, that noise.
But you can't ignore the fact they stopped making them decades ago. So
they did.
Rock hard, and I thought, I'm not going to keep these. So, and actually, a guy who was restoring a Camel Trophy 110 bought them off me, which was just going to go to shows and look cool. And they are the right tyre for that application because that's what they fitted in use.
And, of course, the Army now use the Michelin XZLs, incidentally, are on my new Penman camping trailer. Oldest Hills, those tyres on there. They've got loads of tread, but they're old. There's nothing wrong with them.
The thing you find, and especially the older BF Goodrich all-terrains, mud-terrains not so much because they're a bit more chunky, but the all-terrains, the first generation KO1, I suppose they'd be called, and things like the XZL, very rarely do they wear the tread out completely. You always have to change them because they're cracked and perished before the tread runs out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people who go, 20,000 to 30,000 miles, that's great. But if they're 15 years old, they're not going to, you know, do the job.
It's a bit like those G90s that came on that TD5. They were, say, 20 years old. I can't remember the exact age of them, but they were cracking on and... It's like cracking and perishing and loads of tread. They're just, for me, a boring-looking tyre.
I don't know. The trouble is now we're spoiled for choice. The number of tyre tread patterns out there you've got. No longer have you got road tyres, all-terrains, mud-terrains, extreme. You've got mild all-terrains, traditional all-terrain, aggressive all-terrains, you know, mud-terrains. You've got really crazy stuff like that make... You know, a set of Cymexes from back in the day look like, you know, street tyres. You really do pay your money and take your choice. But for my series Land Rover, funny story. This is another man maths for you, Steve. It's got a V8. It's only a 3.5 low compression V8. So it's not, you know, an absolute monster of an engine. But it would let you cruise at a higher speed, obviously, than a four-cylinder petrol or diesel. And I found that it was revving high on main roads. So I thought, well, you know, I've got a little bit of extra power. I'll get an overdrive. Have you seen the price of used overdrives now?
I haven't, but I can imagine every man and their dog is after one.
For a unknown condition, fairy overdrive, you're talking £600 minimum.
Okay. Oh, I thought it'd been more.
Really?
Yeah. I was thinking you were going to say £1,000.
These are old stuff and they wear out. And I was like, do I want to risk that amount of money on something that may be no good? I know I'll fit taller tyres. So I did. And while it has sorted out the cruising speed, obviously you pay for that in other areas.
The acceleration.
So, yeah, I mean, overdrive's great because it's like selectable. So you get up to X amount, you know, X mile an hour in four.
Certainly an A road or something like that.
You click overdrive in and it quietens down, whereas tyres, not only have I gone for mud terrains, so they're noisier anyway, but you can never switch them off. So on and off road, I've got, you know, the gearing is sort of not messed up, but you notice it.
Yeah. So if you were towing, for example, it would have a detrimental effect because you need that acceleration. So it's never a thing, is it, with Land Rovers? And that's what makes them interesting. No one size fits all.
No, exactly. And actually, if people ask me, I need to change my tyres, I want to get bigger ones, what should I do? I kind of recommend they just stick with the original size because, you know, Land Rover didn't just chuck them on for no reason. They would have developed the Land Rover and the tyre to be that size for that application.
I tend to agree. Some of the nicest Land Rovers I've ever driven, when all said and done, they're totally standard.
Yeah.
And, you know, not all of our people in the magazine will agree. You know, you can upgrade things and you can improve things. But sometimes you can go too far.
The only...
And you change what that vehicle was.
I agree. And actually, the only sort of recommendation I'd make to certainly anyone who's got like a standard 90, which had 205 R16s, you know, real small tyres.
Yeah, you see that. You see them quite a lot. In fact, if you go to places like Spain or Tenerife and you see the Land Rover, they often have 205 tyres on.
Yeah, I mean, that was factory fitment. But in that, I would say probably you could go to a 750, which is like the standard long wheelbase size, or, you know,
235, which is
as close as you can get to a 750. Yeah. And of course, you haven't got to worry. There's the Britpart actually have just started selling a 6.5 inch wide steel wheel. So gone are the days of, you know, looking all over the place for early forward control and 130.
And they are still fetching strong money.
Well, they are at the moment. But now that Britpart have brought out this tubeless one that looks exactly the same, why would you not have them?
I actually want some.
No, I want some too.
You see, that wheel, it's a bit like the banded Ross styles. Some people say Rose style, I say Ross style.
Yeah.
That wheel, lots of people are taking them off Range Rover Classics, bidding them, sending them to scrap. And all of a sudden, they're in vogue at the moment.
Yeah.
Those wheels are all of a sudden
they are
retro cool.
Everyone.
Resto mod.
It's Devon Defenders that are doing them, isn't it? Banding them out.
Yeah, they were at our show and they were selling wheels and tyres.
Twisted, of course, have done their own 18-inch alloy version of the Ross style, which looks really cool. There's a lot.
So steel is a new alloy because everybody got rid of steel wheels to change to alloys, and now it seems to be that every Land Rover you look at now, Wolf steel wheels or Wolf replica.
Yes. I mean,
is the way
to bringing out. I mean, I'd say alloys and steels are sort of evolving at the same pace. You've got mini lights now. You can get mini lights for Land Rovers. Have you seen them?
I have. I'm not a fan.
Are
the mini perfect?
Yeah. I mean, when I first saw the product shots of them not fitted to anything, I thought, oh, I don't know about that. But actually, when you see one on like a soft top 90, a gunmetal soft top 90, or like a retro style thing in silver, they look really cool.
Yeah, you see, again, it's down to that right looking vehicle, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, they would look odd on mine. Mine is National Trust TD590 hardtop, and long may that continue.
Yeah.
With that, I think a subtle nod to like a banded wheel or a slightly steel wheel of that calibre, like a Wolf wheel, they just look like you care about your wheels and tyres and it's not just rolled off the production line.
Well, I think for yours especially, and you know, if you read the mag regularly, you will have seen Steve's 90s, really, really nice little thing. Like he's constant green, white roof, like your typical agri.
It's farm spec. No radio, no nonsense.
Really?
Up windows.
It's funny. Ever since when I first obviously started at LRM, you're like, oh, yeah, it's completely standard. You're really pleased with the fact that you hadn't done anything to it. And since then, it's had like insulation, panels in the back, seats. Hasn't it had seats?
Yeah, we've swapped the seats out for some new Exmoor trim in G4 trim, LED headlamps.
LED headlamps.
I need to see it at night.
Suspension. It's had...
Yeah, it's standard.
Yeah, standard height.
Kind of standard height, but upgraded.
Anyway, the point is I'm getting...
Control treatment.
Yeah.
I'm future-proofing that car for me. But again, it's my idea of Land Rover perfection. But to somebody else, they would think, why is it not resprayed in
well, a different is it? There's
shade of well, a black or a
the. What it's really refreshing to see actually is the creativity people are having with putting defenders together, because they followed the same sort of formula for so many decades. Everyone did the same thing, but now, you know, it's a lot more diverse, I would say. There's so many people that are like, well, I want to do this, so I'm going to do it.
Yeah, we're seeing this a lot. So the new thing now is, I mean, if it was 10, 15 years ago, everybody was sticking checker plate in every single panel and bolting on every single optional extra cannon. And now that simple look, that kind of basic OEM look is what people are aspiring to having.
Strong, it is popular, but, you know, people are still... You still see extreme off-road builds, not as many now. You still see a lot of camping and overlanding inspired stuff, which is great. The world's your oyster. The thing is with Land Rovers, really, we're spoiled. We're probably the most spoiled for choice, car brand sort of aftermarket parts-wise, than any other make and model, I would say.
Well, I suppose we're spoiled because everybody producing parts for Land Rovers doesn't really know who they're producing them for. If you were to wind the clock back 25 years ago, you could spot a Land Rover owner a mile away. Now, well, particularly
under a Defender owner,
that's true. Anybody.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you could turn up to anywhere, you know, people like David Beckham turning up to top quality hotels in London, Kensington, in his Defender. But equally, Farmer up the road still using one. So yeah. It's kind of like, who is a Land Rover owner now? It's everybody.
Well, that goes back to that, the old adage of they're a classless vehicle, aren't they? You can turn up in the middle of like London or, you know, posh village somewhere and park it up and no one will know if you haven't got two pennies to rub together or if you're a multimillionaire.
Bit like me. Not me.
Well, a multimillionaire.
No. But I spend all that money on Land Rovers. Of course we've got
no. Well, no, exactly. But getting back to it, we were looking at your window, weren't we, at your 90 the other day, and you were umming and ahhing about wheels and tyres. So
it needs, yeah. Because the white steel wheels, they've got bits of rust coming through, and they seem to rust for breakfast, those things. And it's time to kind of, I don't know, I kind of feel like it needs something.
Well, you won't get any, you know, I won't be telling you to not do it because...
My wife might.
Yeah, maybe, but I think, personally, the subject quickly... I think either the new, like I just said, the ones that Britpart are doing, the 6.5-inch tubeless steelies, the smooth ones, all white wolf wheels, but they have to be white, not like limestone, because they need to match the roof. Otherwise, you get that weird mismatch. And
I have seen that on somebody else's car, but, you know, they might have been painting things. But, yeah, no, definitely. I think that's the thing. But we were talking about wheels of old, weren't we, the other day as well? And white eight spokes.
Oh.
Love them or hate them?
I quite like them.
Yeah.
I think they're... I mean, I fitted mine. I got mine off Land Rover Life Editor, Neil, actually. He was selling them and I bought them. And I bought them because they were a bit dirty and a bit rusty and a bit oily. And the rest of my Series 3 looks kind of the same as that. So they blend in really well. Prior to that, I had a set of, funnily enough, banded Defender wheels on it, which were sort of done to the same width as the one-ton rims. But I took them off because they were bright white and they showed up all the imperfections on the rest of the vehicle, whereas you get like a slightly shabby wheel and put it on a slightly shabby vehicle, it looks sort of, it fits in.
Otherwise it looks, yeah.
They stick out like a sore thumb, and no amount of me like going off-road and green-laning them and not cleaning them was making them look any less. You know, you had to put sunglasses on to look at them compared to the rest of the thing, so... but as a wheel, I like them.
See, back in the day, we talk about Billing Actraim and the Land Rover show, everyone queuing up white eight spokes or silver modulars.
Yeah.
It was either you chose that one or that one.
Yeah.
And I remember, and I was about, I was about 11 or 12 years old, a chap that used to work for my granddad at the woodyard, here at the woodyard, logging business. It was an F Redge Maasai Red 90 hardtop with county stripes.
Nice.
And the most gleaming, the freshest of white eight spoke wheel. And I've never owned a white eight spoke wheel.
Well.
And, you know, the sad thing is,
go on.
You can still buy them today.
You can.
But hardly anyone does.
Well,
the numbers are so minuscule.
They're going to make a comeback.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Now we've said this.
No, not well.
Are we leading the way?
The resurgence has already happened, or has already started. Jack Dobson, Land Rover contributor, and Land Rover restorer in Australia, his 88-inch V8 currently sports chrome 8 spokes.
Oh, now chrome were. Now I remember chrome. Yeah.
You either love it or you hate it.
Yeah, I'm not so keen.
Well,
there's only one colour for the 8 spoke, and it is white.
White. White with the
red and
white band.
The red and blue band.
That's it. Sorry, red and blue.
Yeah.
Oh, a classic look.
You see, another reason why I love the white 8 spoke wheel, and we looked this up yesterday actually, was the album cover for Bryan Adams when he was getting going, because he had a Land Rover 100 inch, like a Defender inspired by. Nick Dimbleby's TEW. Anyone who's ever read about TEW will know that that's the Land Rover that should have been built. Production.
An amazing.
Let's be honest.
A little bit obsessed with TEW.
TEW was the pinup for me back in the day. And it's, numerous guises through the years. So Bryan Adams, the rock star, if anyone doesn't know who Bryan Adams is.
A bit before my time. But
yeah, of course. But the album cover was just a white 8 spoke.
Yeah.
I think it was a BF Goodrich tyre, but they hand-painted the album name on the tyre.
Oh, an
absolute cracking thing.
I completely agree. And
we have a good authority, he no longer owns that car, but he's still a Land Rover.
Where it is. Just,
yeah. Anyone know where it is? Get in touch.
That'd be good.
I
got my Sherlock Holmes hat on and tried to decipher exactly what tyre it was on that wheel. But what a great album cover. With the name of the, Bryan Adams, and then the...
Supposing,
what was the album called? We looked it up.
Oh, I can't remember.
Oh.
I need to look now.
Someone's going to comment and say what it was.
Yeah, Summer of 69's on the album, and Run To You. I know that's...
All the classics.
Yeah, all the ones you know is on the album cover.
A brilliant, brilliant cover.
But as a wheel in time, I mean, that's a big, bold statement. You could put anything on that cover for an album.
Yeah. Well, he was all about,
Yeah.
He was involved in off-road motorsport, I believe, as well.
But I didn't know that.
Apparently. I think it was him. I don't know. Like I say, I'm far too young to remember these things. But, old school tyres as well. Do you remember, looking through magazines of old, and they had, double-page Craddock's wheel and tyre packages?
Oh.
Wildcat EXTs.
You had to send off then. Yeah. Mail order wasn't really a thing. You had to send
the stamp
address envelope. Colway made Reeboks.
Yeah, yeah.
They made wheel and tyre packages quite affordable.
Yeah, you could have your 8 spokes with Colway MTs on, couldn't you?
Are Colway still in business?
I don't know. I think they make mud and snow tyres for things, but I don't think they make 4x4 tyres. Last time I checked.
Was it? Were these back in the day when you see half a tyre on the side of the road? You don't see that now, do you? Lorries, you do.
Some of the remolds are of questionable quality. I think now they're so stringently regulated that it really isn't an issue, but you would buy remolds for off-roading back 15, 20 years ago because, if you had... I jokingly laugh with one of my mates who had Bronco Grizzly Claws on his 90 and, he'd be driving along with the window down and a chunk of tread would fly past it, and you think, what speed are these rated to again? Yeah. I'd be delaminated
an hour and a half
six
time.
Months. Yeah,
I mean, there is that say, isn't it? If you buy cheap, you buy twice, and I think that is true of tyres. Do you know, I accidentally bought some cheap tyres, and I don't mind admitting, I had a Freelander 1,
right?
Got rid of it 2 or 3 years ago, sold it to my mate Farmer David, a bit of a character. He uses it. But I bought Landsale tyres. Not by choice. This is the only time...
Not by choice?
Well, it was a case of it needed tyres. I didn't have a lot of spares.
What the local garage had.
And he said, I'll fit some really good tyres. They're brilliant. We sell loads of them, was his words. And he put these Landsales on.
Right.
And I'm telling you now, 8,000 miles later, well, I've changed tyres for worse. They were done. I mean, I'm not running, Landsale for other vehicles, maybe absolutely fine. But for that Freelander, it seemed to get through to 8,000 miles.
One thing that...
Don't get me wrong. They had tread left, but not as much as I'd like.
Okay.
I think 15,000 miles.
I think what people are probably reminded of, or should be reminded of, is the newer Land Rovers, especially anything sort of Disco 2 onwards. they're such heavy, demanding vehicles on things like brakes, bushes, and tyres that if you if you try and save money and skimp on them, it will bite you, or it can bite you. I remember when I, worked at the main dealer, and you'd get people in the car would just be out of warranty, and it would need a set of tyres, and we'd, send them up to the tyre bay, and they'd go up there, and it would come back for, the rest of the work or whatever, and it'd have like some incomprehensible tyre brand on it, and you just think, this is still like a £35,000-£40,000 car, and you've spent as little as you can on tyres. They're so important to get right.
So whenever I've purchased cars that are non-Land Rovers, because we don't always run Landers all of the time. I know. Believe it, can you?
Speak for yourself.
I know. But, sometimes I get a bit sidetracked by other cars.
Yeah.
I have turned down cars purely based on this tyre choice.
It's one of the best things you can do when you go to look to buy any vehicle is see if the tyres match axle to axle. Obviously, if they're the same, they need to be the same size. But if someone's had a puncture and put one tyre on, it kind of makes you wonder, well, if that other tyre was half worn, they're really, being tight about this. They should have fitted a pair. You look at the brand of tyre that's been fitted. There's a lot. Tyres tell a lot about how a car's been looked after, I find.
Or the interest that that person's taken in it, or if they're actually interested in cars at all.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, cars these days, apart from Land Rovers, seem to be throwaway items purchased on PCP. And just discarded like a phone contract. And for me, it doesn't sit well. I just think you invest in that vehicle and you spend on things like tyres and servicing and all of that good stuff.
I know I hate to coin this phrase because it's used so much, but tyres are the only thing keeping between, your vehicle and the road.
Or the green lane, or
mud or snow or whatever you're driving on. But you could have every single singing and dancing mod done to your car and it could be the best thing ever. But if it's on like useless, cheap, rubbish tyres, then you might as well forget it.
Definitely. Do you know what I reckon is the best tyre ever made for Land Rovers?
Go on.
Firestone Sat.
That's a sweeping statement, Steve. I mean,
Firestone Sat, man.
Terrifying.
Tell me where they don't go.
The road. And they go up roundabouts and into ditches. I had the Federman Maxima. I really wanted Sats on my 109 when I first got it.
The Federman Maxima is a replica Walter Firestone Sat.
It's a modern take on the Firestone Sat. So it's radial. You can get them in, you used to be able to get them in 650, but I don't know if they've been discontinued. And you could get them in 750, which is what I got. And they're a little bit narrower than your original Sat, but they're, a decent enough thing. But you can't get past the fact that each sidewall lug is a chunk of rubber that's they weigh a ton. They make loads of noise. They kill your fuel consumption, but they do look cool.
I remember reading, and this may not be true, but that was kind of a benchmark tyre back in the day for trialing. So they would say, basically, fit any tyre you like, no more aggressive than a Firestone Sat.
Yes. Yeah,
so that was always like the limit. It was the limit to the tyre you could have on a private pay and play.
Yeah, you're right. The wording was no open tread patterns, so you couldn't have dumper tyres or
V-grip tyres.
Like your staggered, I can't remember the name. But
yeah, I know what you mean.
A dumper tyre, like a tractor tyre, or the old Maxi Cross, like the motocross style tyre that was made for Land Rover size, and basically a knobbly tyre. It had to have some sort of continuous tread in the centre, which a Sat did, but it also had enormous gaps, didn't it, between the sidewall lugs.
Perfect gaps.
They were huge.
Yeah.
Then I suppose from that, that's where your Cymex Extreme Trekker and your Jungle Trekker, which was like a bar grip, they were like what you used for trialing and winch challenge events and things like that back in the early 2000s. And now, of course, you've got all sorts to choose from. But I digress, but obviously like your traditional Land Rover based winch challenge motor off-roader is now a tube frame buggy, and there's very few actual true Land Rover based extreme stuff about anymore, and they're all fitting sticky trepidors.
Of course, yeah.
What's the other ones? The CST Land Dragons, is it? The massive, like,
I mean, these tyres are not something that you're going to get from your local quick fit.
No. There's a few distributors in the UK, but they're like, you've got to be serious about it's a competition tyre, really, at that point, I think.
Yeah, and obviously we're not far away from going to the Billing Off-Road Show, are we, where they'll be racing around in...
Yes, absolutely.
Some of them look like Land Rovers, but really, most of them are not. Most of the top-end competition...
Yeah, to be competitive now, I think you're really looking at... There's a couple of exceptions. Team Hybrid still race something that looks like a Series 1, which is really, really cool. You know, it's all panelled up like a Series 1, but, you know, it's
not
a highly developed car. But yeah, we're getting off track.
Easy to get off track. We talked about that.
No pun intended.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I mean, again, it depends what you're doing. For the sensible advice is, doesn't matter what you're doing with your Land Rover. If you do a bit of green laning, or you're in and out of muddy gateways or whatever, an all terrain, a good all terrain will pretty much do what you need. Which is what I think you should fit on your 90 when the time comes.
But which brand?
Well, everyone has their preferences, don't they? It's a bit of a minefield, really.
It is.
A bone of contention.
No, Toyo, we've just bought one out, haven't they?
New Toyo 83 looks very good.
Yeah, it does look very nice.
BF Goodrich KO3 is coming.
Okay, so some of our readers and some of our now listeners...
Yes.
...may have.
They might have got on it early.
Yeah.
I remember... Sorry, to go... hark back again, but when I finally stopped daily driving Defenders and got in a Discovery 1, gorgeous Discovery 1, first thing I did was go down to, it was up to Norwich to a tyre dealer there. I forget the name. It's a long time ago. And it was when the BF Goodrich KM2 mud had just come out, and I was like,
oh, wow.
Absolutely buzzing. I was like, oh, this is going to be great. And I got black modulars with standard size KM2s on. I was like, oh, yeah, this is... I felt like
all of your wages was gone.
Oh yeah, complete, absolutely no responsibility. But I just had to have them, and they were a great tyre.
Yeah, I want to go buy some tyres.
You should buy some tyres, mm-hmm. So, reader's question of the week is the next thing we were going to talk about, but because this is our first podcast, we don't actually have one ready. So
what do people need to do if they have a question?
And for
we'll try and either answer it or. Make up the answer?
No, we'll answer it.
Genuinely answer the question.
What you can do, if you would like us to answer your question, is email editorial@lrm.co.uk. And what we'll do is, we won't get back to you straight away via email, but we will note down all the questions that come in, and then we'll make a point to answer them on the podcast.
And also, what are we going to talk about next? We've touched on tyres. I'm sure tyres will come up again.
Oh, without a doubt. You can't get away from tyres. I could harp on about tyres for days. No one wants to
do that. Well, we do. We ought to do some work, really.
Probably. But yeah, there's... It's very difficult to... This is the thing is, you know, when you get asked, should I... Not even just tyres, other accessories. Should I fit X? Should I fit X? Land Rovers are so versatile, you know, you've got to think for yourself. You've got to do what you want to do with them.
Yeah. Because people do expect us to give them the answer quite often. And we just can't, because, you know, my choice, if we were to go out now with an open checkbook and you build a Land Rover and I build one,
yeah.
They're two completely different cars.
Absolutely.
One would be better.
Maybe that's what we should do. Maybe we should...
Well, ask the boss for an open check.
Yeah, I'm sure they'd be fine.
Yeah. Just spend the entire editorial budget for LRM.
See
LRM going down the pan. You know, we're overspent.
Yeah, that's a good shout. Actually, yeah, that brings me on nicely to feature of the week, which is on the cover of the issue, which has not long been on sale now.
Oh, yes.
And it is G-Wack John himself, John Masters' collection of Discovery Ones. He has got a fine collection of discos, and it seems like he's maybe got a mild addiction to picking them up out of barns and sheds and bringing.
Who doesn't have that addiction?
Well,
if you don't look for Land Rovers in barns, are you a true enthusiast?
I think he's a great example, to be fair. We say about it all the time when we're discussing the classified ads that come in to Land Rover Monthly to go on the website and in the magazine, and it's often that you don't actually go looking for a Land Rover. They tend to find you.
Every single one of mine has found me. It's not, and that's what I say to my wife. It's not me, it's the Land Rover.
They flock to me.
Begging to be purchased.
The self-justification involved is my go-to excuse is always, well, if I don't buy this one now, then I'll probably never be able to get one in the future. And of course, that's...
I've said that time and time again.
So
it's a bit like the Defender market. You know, we know 3-4 years ago, the prices were beyond the reach of many people.
COVID tax.
Yeah. And now we're seeing them. They're almost, I mean, it's refreshing because...
reach sensible levels
again. Coming back again.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen a few like that you would see for sale. I've seen a few on sort of marketplace and on in the classifieds and even on eBay and things like that. And you're like, wow, that actually is a lot of vehicle for the money. If it's as good as it looks in the pictures, and you've got to be very careful to make sure it is, they are reasonable value again. Whereas for a long while, they would,
our next subject could be, what is the ultimate Land Rover model?
Well,
because what is it?
Again,
don't answer that question.
You can't answer it because it's so subjective.
No, I think I can, see?
Oh, right, okay. Confident Steve.
Yeah, I know.
Well, don't answer it now. We'll save it for a future one.
Because everyone will disagree.
Well, I might.
You probably will. It's not like you to agree with anything I say.
Hey, that's not true. We have very, very differing views on some things. That's.
I think that's good. He's good.
If you did go to LRM Live, on the 18th, 19th of May.
I went.
You did. And do you know what else went, Steve? Your camping trailer.
Yes, it did. Literally next year. XLRs on it.
Very exciting because...
That's what got me thinking about the tyres, because I'm looking at the train, you see.
Yeah, it's... Do you think you'll change them on that to match the Land
Rover? No, match the Land Rover to match the trailer.
Really?
It's Wolf wheels, man.
Oh, the wheels, yeah, but you wouldn't put XZLs on the Land Rover, surely?
No, I think I need to go for something a bit more modern than that tyre. I mean, those ones were as old as the hills as well. The trailer's from, like, 2003, and I think they're probably the original tyres.
Yeah. Those trailers never did much, to be fair.
No, this one's not done much.
But the important thing is you got it finished and you made it there because you...
Well, it's not finished.
Oh, okay, not finished.
It was acceptable to put a roof end on without it falling off on the M42.
Well, that's what you were aiming for, and, you've got to set the bar at a sensible level.
It went there and back.
I think you achieved, really, for someone who's never fabricated anything before, apart from...
You've been looking at
the
odd world,
white lie. You've done an absolutely stunning job on it.
Well, you see, I had a go at welding, and I'm a bit disappointed because... I set light to my favourite jumper. I burnt through some trousers. Just, when you get the splatter sometimes when, I don't know, you're not put the torch quite close enough or whatever, and you get that kind of, and it just flies out.
It was either a mate's helping, I can't remember what I was doing, I was building a sliding door or something, and I had one of my favourite jackets on, and I quickly did a bit of, cleaned up a weld on a bit of metal, and it shot sparks all over the front of my jacket and melted it all together. I was very upset about that.
You see, we're not conforming to health and safety.
Well, I wasn't on that day.
No.
But I had my goggles on. I just also had my best jacket on. So
I always do that. I think I'll just... So I randomly pick up a paintbrush and you think, I'll just do that little bit. I won't get any on me.
Oh, yeah.
And guess what?
That's a mistake, isn't it?
Every single time. You can paint all day in your scruffs. Nothing happens. The minute you go out there in
reasonable clothes, that's it.
Something happens.
Right off.
Always away.
So you may or may not have seen Steve's trailer. You may not have seen it because it was parked in the, what we like to affectionately call the VIP camping area.
I just called it the Marshall's camping.
It's
Definitely not
all right, VIP. Well, I've got delusions of grandeur then. I like to call it the VIP camping area.
Yeah, but you were VIP. You were the camp chef.
I was the camp chef. No, I think I'm head of catering.
Head of catering.
Yeah, I was really pleased with that. It meant I got to barbecue two nights in a row. And
I think you were secretly eating one burger for you, one burger for somebody.
I was being very good, actually.
How many burgers did you eat?
That's not a question I'm willing to answer.
More than two?
Over the whole weekend, yeah, it would have been more than two.
No, I'm on about the...
You'd barely finished your first one before you wanted the second. I couldn't give them to you quick enough.
Well, all right. Two Burger Steve. I'm not called Two Burger Steve for nothing.
But no, yeah.
We invented something yesterday, didn't we?
What's that? Two Cake Tuesday.
Two Cake Tuesday.
Yeah.
That's got to be a thing. Two cakes on a Tuesday.
We'll be rolling to Malvern next year if we stick to two cakes on Tuesday.
Like an on fire sensat.
But the trailer, you've got to tell us more about the trailer, because currently it is, like you said, it's a penman, an ex-military penman, yeah, with a very, well, homemade frame on the top and a roof tent.
So, yes. So for me, working at Land River Shows and putting a roof tent, so I've got a front runner roof tent on a front runner rack, lovely setup, perfect. However, I need access to the vehicle to go and do jobs, pick things up,
yeah,
et cetera, et cetera. And then the roof tent thing was a bit frustrating, having it on the roof of the car, because you can't set up tight your camp, you can't put the drop-down annex on there, plug your fridge in, et cetera. So I don't like caravans, and I don't mind admitting I did own a caravan for a while.
Right.
And it's not for me. Okay. I bought it because it was cheap, and long story, but that's gone. And so I thought, and I hate camping on the ground. I don't know about, well, I know you do.
Well, not strictly
on the ground. And the roof tent thing, anyone that's never been in a roof tent, I think anyone that is their first experience of a roof tent, it's quite novelty, really. But you look out over the camp fields, you know, over the,
yeah,
it's commanding position. It's lovely.
To date,
really, really enjoy it.
I've never slept in a roof tent.
Yeah, you'll be a convert if you did.
I've been in a roof tent. I've never slept in one, and I reckon I would probably enjoy it.
Because you don't get the dampness off the ground.
Yeah.
You don't get attacked by those wild animals.
You've got to be careful. Especially, you know, the UK is known for its, you know, yeah, high...
No, I was bitten by zero snakes.
Wolf and lion population's out of control, isn't it?
Yeah. And so what I did, decided ages ago, I wanted a penman trailer because I love the look of it, and I've invented a reason to need it.
No, you haven't. You've got a genuine reason to need it.
I have now.
Right.
But I was thinking, if I had a penman trailer, what would I use it for? And the answer back then was nothing. But I wanted one anyway.
Okay.
And then, yeah. So what happened was, then I thought, I know, I will put, and I know we featured, what, last year sometime, the Nino, you know, Camelback trailer.
Amazing trailer.
They are.
Based on a penman?
Yes. Yeah. An aluminium box, roof tent. You know, and they are, you know, having had a go at building one, I thought, oh, they're quite expensive, but now they are worth every single.
Well, the thing is, it's time, isn't it? Like, time and development and all that stuff. A lot of people say certain Land Rover accessories are a lot of money, and they are, but the reason for that is you're not just buying the part, you're buying the part and all the development, fabrication, mistakes made to get to that point.
No, definitely. I have a newfound respect for a lot of products, because if you try and make something yourself,
yeah,
in your shed, it's always going to be look like you've made it. So what I've done is I've essentially bought this penman trailer, and I've put a steel frame on there, and because I can't weld aluminium, in fact I can barely weld steel.
No, I think you did a good job.
I had a go, but keeping a frame like that square is
of course.
I have a whole newfound respect for anybody that welds for a living.
What size box did you use? I can't remember.
So I used 30mm box with a 2.5mm section, and had a bit of a practice at welding first with some offcuts, and basically I drew out a plan as to how I thought it should look. But once I got going and I started welding extra bits in and extra strength here and extra strength there, just to kind of make sure that it was going to take my weight, my wife's weight, and the weight of a roof tent.
Yeah, I mean, you've added in a fair bit of, you've got uprights and diagonals and all sorts, so I can't imagine. Because on the face of it, it doesn't sound like 2.5mm wall thickness doesn't sound that much, does it?
No, but I looked at some people on the forums use 1mm, and I thought that's just too thin.
1mm?
1.5mm, and somebody else did 3mm. So I thought, I'm going to sort of compromise here and say 2.5mm. It's definitely strong enough.
Yeah, I mean, you've used it already, but how did you actually get the tent on? Because it's not a factory, it's not like a Land Rover where everything's available off the shelf.
Well, when the tent was mounted to my front runner roof rack, it was mounted on the quick release brackets. Well, the footprint of those are too wide for the box tubing, because it was actually only 30mm wide. So I basically made a couple of roof rails and then resorted back to the original way a roof tent would fit to roof rails, by sourcing the original fittings for the tent.
Right, so yeah, it's basically replicated what it would have gone on anyway. And
yeah, say if I'd gone to, I don't know, Halfords or somewhere like that and bought some factory roof bars, I've essentially made them out of steel, and they can bolt on and off as I see fit. So yeah, it's a good start, really.
And a successful camping weekend on there. So you know the concept's proven now, don't you?
Well, the thing is, my first journey was to Malvern. So I drove it round the block. I mean, literally, I committed. That's how close to the wire the build was.
Good stuff. So just got to crack on now, get it clad and everything else, put the doors in it and all that sort of thing.
I don't think it'll ever be finished because I know how I work. I need a deadline. So
keep developing it.
Oh, perhaps the billing. It should be clad by billing. Ooh.
Yeah, that'd be good.
4 weeks, 5 weeks away from now? Yeah,
that'd be good. Come and see it at Billing. If you're there, come and have a look and ask Steve about it. I'm sure he'd like to show you around his new living quarters.
And I'll show you my first welds versus my final welds.
You improve all the time, don't you? That's the thing with welding. Everyone says it. It's such a cliche, but really practice does make perfect, doesn't it?
It's certainly strong enough. And I don't consider myself a welder. Far from it. But I can get away with it.
Sure. Yeah, it's...
I could weld an outrigger on a Land Rover, but I'm confident I could do that now.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah.
Not a cross member, but an outrigger. Start.
Nothing you need to, put a tow hitch on, maybe. But, cool. Well, I think we'll wind it up, shall we? Thanks so much for listening to our first ever podcast, and I hope you'll join us on the next one. Don't forget to get stuck in with reader's question, or listener's question, as the case may be. Drop an email to editorial@lrm.co.uk and we'll endeavour to answer those in the incoming podcasts. Like and comment, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff. We're trying to be more consistent with our YouTube channel as well, so please subscribe to that and keep an eye on that channel for Land Rover content as well, and we'll catch you on the next one. Thanks very much for listening. Goodbye.
Bye from me as well.